All right, welcome back. 8:20 here on a full Friday, Thursday morning. JR, Simmer, and Hammer with you. If you're just joining, if you normally kind of just get up this time of day or whatever, or normally just kind of tune in this time of day and you're used to our TSN Hockey Insiders, one of Dave Poulin or Mike Johnson. Again, Mike is with us on Tuesdays and Thursdays. As Mike, as you well know, is doing color at the World Hockey Championships in Helsinki, and today is quarterfinal day, and I believe he said he made his way from Helsinki, so now he's in Tampere.
Yeah.
Which is how far from Helsinki?
Just about 2 hours north, JR. I've been many times. I thought the other side was in Turku, which is on the west coast, but we were watching in the new building there. That is in Tampere. That was where Jarmo Kekäläinen played. A lot of famous players have come out of the program there.
All right, so Mike made his way up there. Today's quarterfinal day, which is the busiest day of the tournament, really, with four win and stay in games. So anyway, Mike joined us last hour, so if you love to listen to Mike, and who doesn't, gave us some great stuff on the Worlds, on Drake Batherson and Thomas Chabot, a preview of today's quarterfinal game versus Sweden for Canada that starts in 1 hour from now, and that we will have for you here on TSN 1200. You can find it on our website, tsn1200.ca, link to it as well on our TSN 1200 Twitter. We're not going to, just because we did it an hour ago, not going to revisit that now, yeah. But you can certainly find it. We'll replay a little portion of of his preview of the game today, coming up just before we head to Tampere next hour.
Well, it'll be a fun game, JR. Sweden tactically, and I was going to ask MJ, we had a short time. So strange that a Swedish coach isn't a head coach in the NHL. They are so efficient, so well, and it'll be fun if you tune in, because Willie Nylander will be just a-dancing. And I remember going to the Sweden games, and that's in February, and watching his dad play. And his dad was by far the best player on the ice. Had the puck the whole game. At that time, he was a property of the Calgary Flames, and I was sitting with Nick Polano, and Nick worked for Calgary at the time, and he's like, got to get him to come back, because he and Pierre Paget hated each other. So Nick said, listen, we're going to meet after, go for a little bite tea, why don't you come with me? I'm like, sure. So go to have a bite, and we sit down with the dad, and Nick is just a cagey old hockey veteran, and says, boy, Pierre's been asking how you're doing, and wants to know what. Pierre hates him. Michael is like, oh, really? That's kind of nice. And sure enough, they work things through. He went back the following year and went on his way. So it'll be a fun game. I have not watched any of the World Championships yet, but I will watch today because I really like watching Sweden play, and it'll be a fun game against Canada.
Yeah, Canada has played seven games, and for a lot of people, right? You know, yeah, depending on the games are during the day here, so and during the week, and you know, people are busy or they've been dealing with, I don't know, a power outage, and it's been impossible to watch.
Yeah.
All that to say, it feels like this part up until now is really long, whether you are over there playing in it, broadcasting it, or if you're a fan. And now all of a sudden, the really important games start, and it's boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
It's quarterfinal, and if you win today, semi on Saturday, gold medal game on Sunday. So these are the really important games, and they come in very short order. Everything will be cinched up and decided 3 days from now.
Yeah, and if you're the organizers, you're ideal, and I don't know what the brackets are, JR, but obviously in this tournament even more without Russia, you want Sweden and Finland in the final, and it's a big sway on. Now, Finland being the key.
And that can happen, by the way.
Yeah, okay, and good. And because, you know, a lot of Swedes come over, a lot of Swedes live in Finland. So the atmosphere today, and they love watching Canada, but it'll be very pro-Swedish. Lots of fun. And just as far as familiarity, this is where you can kind of look at it, because a lot of the rosters now, and especially without Russia, I mean, you know, a lot of the teams, you just don't know any of the players that are involved unless there's a young prospect.
Fair to say, would the relationship between Finland and Sweden be kind of the same as Canada to the United States, where Finland would be kind of like Canada, the smaller country, the other one would be the bigger country, seen to be kind of, you know, the top dog, whereas as we rightfully so here in Canada feel morally superior in many ways to the Americans, even though they're bigger and brasher and everything like that. Same deal, or Finland and Sweden, they're kind of more on an equal scale?
No, JR, but it's a different level. Like, the United States is pretty kind to us, right? They don't know anything about us, but they're always like, oh, Canada's so friendly. The Swedes and the Finns, in a fun way, for the most part, hate each other. And the typical would be more that the Swedes, just stereotypically, would be the Swedes are super smart, they're all good-looking, they're very arrogant, and the Finns, they call woodchoppers, They're just living their village. They don't have any. So
why are they wood choppers?
Well,
that's what they do?
Well, no, but that was like if you understand at one time, most of Finland was part of Sweden.
Oh.
They just look really down on them in a stereotypical sense. So the hockey side of it, it's another level than Canada, the United States. But now the hockey is because Canada, the United States is terrific. But to my point, it's those heated. I'm trying to think of another comparison. You know, I'd say it's a little bit like when Quebec plays Ontario or, you know, you go a little deeper just because of what goes on between the people at times. So it's a lot of fun. And, you know, and then, like I said, and for the Finns, they are so proud as a nation because they're so small. And there's nothing better than knocking off Sweden. Like, that's for them. Winning the World Championships is big.
Mm.
But if you can beat the Swedes, then there's just it's that much sweeter.
Okay, so that game's coming up in an hour from now here on TSN 1200, part of a double game day, because tonight we've got Game 5 of the Rangers and the Hurricanes. It is the closest of the second round Stanley Cup playoff series. It's been a homer series so far, as in the home team has won every game. Carolina certainly hopes that continues at least for tonight, as they will host a Game 5 again, 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock faceoff here on TSN 1200. Later on tonight, it is the Battle of Alberta, and will it be the final game of the Battle of Alberta as Edmonton is in Calgary? Oilers are up 3-1, having won their 2 games in Edmonton and having won the last 3 games of the series. Of course, Connor McDavid had his quietest game of the first 4 games of this series in the win on Tuesday night, and still picked up 2 assists, which gives him 25 points in 11 games so far in these playoffs. Only Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux have started a Stanley Cup playoff season with more points than Connor McDavid has put.
Yeah.
And, you know, I say with all due respect, and I actually mean this, because usually when you say with all due respect, you're not really saying with respect. Like Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux are, you know, arguably maybe the two top forwards of all time in the NHL. So, but they did it in a time when everybody could score. And the goaltending was terrible. And the coaching was terrible. And the goaltenders didn't wear equipment that, you know, they wore equipment that made them look like themselves.
Made them look like goalies.
Yes, exactly. Whereas Connor McDavid is doing it in a place and time, which is, you know, the hockey is completely different now than it was 30 years ago. So I'm not saying he's better than them. But what he is doing so far, and again, it's 11 games, and we're halfway through round two, but this is pretty remarkable what he's been able to do because, as I said, hockey is so different, so much harder to score now, and he's putting up these unbelievable numbers.
Yeah, it really is, Sharon, and go back to, and you never, you know, the greatness, but hey, Mario for the real prime there had Francis Jagr, you know, a bunch of other players. Gretzky, when you look at the supporting cast, and you now, I shouldn't say that, you look at Dreisaitl. But no, I agree with you. And it was also just impressive, his decision individually in the first round to not go down. I mean, that probably is as impressive as a point, right? Is that, you know, he's just showing, hey, listen, this isn't happening. And that's hard. Like Nathan MacKinnon tried as hard as he darn could last night to deliver it. And, you know, that's hockey, that's sports. That's what makes it so amazing. And you're right, what he's accomplished so far. And I guess if you're a Calgary fan, the one thing you had, Tanev was back in and might be playing with one arm, but at least maybe we did something to him. So maybe it continues on in Game 5.
Yeah. I was thinking last night as MacKinnon was playing an incredible game. We're gonna get to his incredible goal and then the unbelievable comeback by St. Louis in just a second. Because Connor McDavid, you know, his Robin is Leon Draisaitl, but Leon Draisaitl is a forward. So for the sake of this question, I'll leave McDavid out. Who would you of the forward defense combination?
Okay, yeah.
Who would you rather have? Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar, or Nikita Kucherov and Victor Hedman?
Wow. That, yeah.
I was thinking about that. I was watching, as I watched last night, and MacKinnon was just all world, right? And he had that incredible play, but he was dominating the game. And Cale Makar at times is just dominating the game. And I'm thinking, how is it fair that one team has both of those players?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I thought to myself, well, hang on. Like Nikita Kucherov is making some unbelievable plays so far in this playoff, and of course he's got two. And don't forget, I want to include championship rings as you're thinking about this.
Well,
and Victor Hedman, I think overall is considered to be the top defenseman. So which of those two, and I'm talking about, you know, it's the where status of their contracts and how young they are, just in the here and now, which combo would you rather have?
In the here and now, I'll take Tampa Bay. Now, I like to always do it more, JR. If we went back and you were drafting them all at 18, they've done nothing, and I would take the Tampa Bay crew. Hedman, and I love Makar, all world. God, he grabs a puck, JR, you're like, wow. But at the end of the day, he'll never be able to defend like Hedman does. And Hedman doesn't give up much on offense. He's just not nearly as dynamic. In the case of McKinnon, I'm not going to critique the guy, but I'm going to critique the guy. My only issue I have with him, and he did it last night, but when pass failures have happened, he tries to, when it doesn't work, he tries to do it more and more by himself. And last night it worked. But there was a reason in the series, and I thought the first goal kind of set the table for him, although a bit lucky. It was, you know, that method of Kucherov makes everybody else around him better. And I'm not saying McKinnon doesn't, but that's where I would give him. And he's shown us that his size doesn't matter. So I go Tampa Bay. What about you?
I probably agree. You know, if I had to win a game tonight, and which of the two combos, and I'm probably biased based on because the Tampa Bay guys have done it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that sways my opinion on that. You know, your argument of, you know, a year into their career, you know, you might think, you know, and none of the four have won at that point. You might think differently, but I'd go with the Tampa Bay crew. Hammer.
It's a clean sweep. I can't get past the rings. Four rings right there. And seeing what they're doing right now, Kucherov, and sweeping, and no Braden Point by their side, it's Tampa Bay all day for me. Yeah.
Hmm. What? By the way, should I have now? Braden Point is hurt, but let's say Braden Point was healthy, would I have been better off to insert Braden Point for Nikita Kucherov?
No, you got to go with the best player on each team. Yeah. And Kucherov's the best forward.
He's the most skilled player.
Yeah.
Is he the best player?
I say he is, JR, but I know you. Hey, points certainly come a long ways. And, you know, I still think Kucherov. But, yeah, kind of back and forth. And as I said, with McKinnon, that's the only I watch him, JR. And like I said, there's other years. I'm like, okay, now it's amazing. But everybody knows you're coming through the neutral zone. You're going to try to do it by yourself. And last night it worked, and it should have been a miracle finish. Those other guys slow the play down, but hey, we're talking, you know, a couple of years ago, McKinnon, is it McDavid, is it Matthews? I thought you go with the all M's, and it's fun for Colorado, and that's the part with Colorado, JR. There's not anything I can critique that they haven't done. I'm a big fan of, you know, you look at Byram last night, you look at Makar. Now, Makar and McKinnon is also different because they're lottery picks where Kucherov was, what, a second or third round pick?
Second.
You know, and you have Hedman, so that's amazing in itself. But the way they built that team, the way they brought in the Nikushkins, I like Darcy Kemper. I just say methodically, I just think that they've done everything you can do, and it just continues to show you, like the Detroit teams back in the day. You know, sometimes you can't just keep firing people and changing it out. Sometimes you got to just try to stay the course, and they've been very patient there.
Last night should have been a signature game and moment for Nathan McKinnon. Here we go, late in the third, tied at 3.
McKinnon with 2 goals. McKinnon in between the circles. McKinnon, he scores! Oh, my goodness gracious me! Nathan McKinnon, throw the chapeau! I don't believe it. I simply do not believe it. Nathan McKinnon goes right to left, coast to coast. He took the moment. He has 3, and the Avalanche are up by 1 with 2:46 to go in the third period.
And that goal came just after St. Louis had come all the way back from 3-0 down to tie the game at 3. In fact, yours truly had just tweeted out, like the St. Louis Blues back from the dead, full credit. And as I literally hit send, boom, McKinnon has this play that, as I said, should have been the signature moment of his playoff, and really, I think the Stanley Cup playoffs served as the game-winning and series-winning goal, a goal that we'll remember this entire playoff, or as arguably maybe the best goal that we'll see, and in the biggest moment. Yeah. And then it wasn't, because St. Louis ties the game in the final minute, and then Tyler Bozak, of all people, wins at 3:38 into overtime to give the Blues a very unlikely comeback 5-4 win over Colorado, and all of a sudden, all of those little dancing ghosts that have been there for Colorado in all these past few playoffs when they've been a really good team. And I'm actually doing finger moments right now. I'm actually of the ghosts right now. I'm not sure what I'm doing.
Like a marionette or something like that, pulling strings.
Well, exactly. But all those ghosts, especially the last three seasons of Colorado not being able to get through round two, and here they were, 243 or whatever it was away, with the hats flying and McKinnon scoring a crazy goal, should have won the series, and now all of a sudden, what? Mm-hmm. We're going back to St. Louis. We lost, and now we got to go back to that place against a team that won the Cup 3 years ago with a lot of returning players with pretty good pedigree. We got to do that. Yeah. That's not good.
No, and even, you know, and I think the whole Nazem Kadri situation has settled down, although Craig Berube pulled the AV playbook yesterday, which I thought made him even look even worse in the situation. But you don't want to go back. And I think the Kadri thing has calmed down, but it's amped up the series. Everyone's fired up. And from a Colorado standpoint, JR, I don't think they're, you know, for this group right now, there's anything you do say. Like, hey, you wake up. Now you try to keep the energy good without being fake. But it's not sitting there, you know, hey, that's an absolute, you know, punch to the gut. And you've got to somehow figure out a way to rebound in this. I mean, it really is. And for Nathan McKinnon, should have been defining of, remember that turning point when he scored that late goal and they went on to win the cup? Well, now you're saying to yourself, and I don't think that market is negative, but all of a sudden you drop game six in St. Louis, which I think is very possible. That game seven, that'd be really interesting to see how you end up reacting at home, because then talk about pressure just going, you know, next level.
Every media availability, both last night post game, today if they do skate, and they may not, but there'll be some form of either player or coach availability, and then tomorrow after a game day skate, I'm going to take you to every reporter's question that covers the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah.
Nathan, you were 2 minutes and 43 seconds away from advancing to the third round in for the first time in all of your time here in Colorado. Yeah. You didn't do it. Your team failed to seal the deal. How are you feeling heading into game six? Yeah.
And you'll also
repeat. Repeat.
And you might also have, if there is a game seven, the likes of Barry Trotz and other people booking hotels for their interviews in Denver, because there's not a coach on the planet. And this is a Scotty Bowman handbook, JR.
Yeah.
This is what you grab. You don't go doing any Buffalo stuff anymore.
No. Nope.
You take over Pittsburgh. Now, that was Bob Johnson obviously being sick, but go to Detroit when you're just about ready.
This is Babb's handbook, is it not?
Well,
hey, G.E.O. Mike Babcock.
Oh, that would be, that would be pretty funny, actually, now that you say
Darren Dreger does the good Mike Babcock.
Yeah, no, he would be, you're right, but all those guys would be looking at that and saying, hey, man, this.
Whatever you need me to push you over the
top. Yeah, that's the spot to go right now. Yeah, big time. Yeah.
All right, getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. Colorado still leads the series, but yes, the ghosts of playoffs past certainly a little more in the forefront. Game six back in St. Louis comes up tomorrow night. All right, 8:37, we're going to take a break. When we come back, get to your comments. We spent a good portion of last hour talking about Pierre Dorion's comments here on TSN 1200 yesterday regarding the Sens, the potential of trading the number 7 pick, top 4D, top 6, or at least a score at forward, keep the pick. Talked about the status of the defense and JBD and Lassie Thompson. We'll get to your comments on that coming up. Don't forget, 9:20 this morning, we're going to Tempe for Canada-Sweden World Hockey Championship quarterfinal, live here on TSN 1200. Back 8:44 on this Thursday morning. JR Simmer and Hammer with you still to come before we leave at 9:20 for Canada-Sweden quarterfinal at the World Hockey Championships. We'll have a pair of club seats to give away to the Ottawa Titans game coming up tomorrow night. So they've got a game today. Today's game is at noon, weather permitting, and let's check the Yaki window. So it's just some showers, right? Baseball can be played through showers, right, Hammer? Tough baseball player.
Showers, yes.
Thunderstorms, no.
Thunderstorms, absolutely. So, it all depends. You get to standing water, you start to see some puddles, and then players' health.
Right.
Is that risk? Then it gets shut down.
Oh, but you don't want to have puddles, man. Like, seriously.
Hey,
a lot of young kids have disappeared in puddles.
Yeah.
You can hurt something.
Right. But unfortunately, with the way the schedule lays out, I believe this is the one and only trip that Evansville makes to Ottawa. I stand to be corrected, but I believe it is. So this is the last opportunity to. Now they're not going to put the health and health and safety of players, ticket sales ahead of that. But
little triple header.
Maybe. Anyway, the game is scheduled for noon today. Looks like maybe if there is going to be some bad weather, it might be later this afternoon. They'll be able to squeeze in the game. But anyway, the Titans be looking to make the sweep after they won again last. They haven't given up a run in the first two games. 2-0 win a couple of nights ago. 1-0 win last night. So they'll go for the sweep this afternoon at noon, taking on Evansville. Then they'll play this weekend as well. 3 more home games. We got a set of tickets to give away to tomorrow's game coming up before we leave at 9:20. Also, Ottawa Blackjacks began their season last night. They had the lead for most of the game and lost 90-87 to the Fraser Valley Bandits. Fraser Valley was, and again, the way they do it in the CEBL, mm-hmm. is they have what's called the Elam ending, which is you're playing for a target score. You're not playing till the end. There is no time. You're playing to get to a certain score.
Oh.
So, which is the way it has been. And it'll be very complicated to try to. Yeah. It's essentially when at the 4-minute mark of what's left in the fourth quarter, they stop the game. And then no matter what the score is, you add 9 points to the team that's in the lead. Okay, so let's say a game is 80-70,
mm-hmm.
okay, the target, so the game at 4 minutes left, the game is stopped at that point, the target score then becomes 89, so 80 plus 9,
okay. Well.
And then it's the first team that gets to 89 wins the game. That's the way the Elam ending works in the CEBL. So last night, tight game throughout, but Fraser Valley pulls it out on a three-pointer and wins by 3, 90. To 87, but a big night for Dang Adele, who is a new player for the Blackjacks. How about 37 points in your first game? Yeah. 9 rebounds and 5 assists.
Yeah, so. It looked like a pretty good crowd, GRA.
I did not see.
Just a couple of pictures. And also from the baseball team, interest in driving to Hunt Club on the billboards there, a little bit of advertising. And I think back to Jeff Hunt taking over the 67s and with the new ownership, hopefully they can, through marketing and certainly trying hard, to start getting some bums in the seat. So wishing both of those franchises good luck.
You get the kids, you get the partnership, you get these leagues involved, and God knows there's a lot of baseball leagues in this town. The Titans will be just fine.
Saw a picture of the Kanata Cubs at the game last night.
Yep.
Is that your arch? Well, used to be your arch rival?
In Little League, absolutely.
I think I've got a Kanata Cubs hat.
What, you got a Kanata Cubs hat?
From back in the day, yes.
Well, when you were a little Cub?
No.
Little Leaguer?
I was asked to make an appearance, I think, at a Kanata Cubs event at Scott Taucasi Park.
Yeah, a beautiful park.
Very nice.
Beautiful park there.
Okay, CFL, speaking of stuff that's upcoming here in the city, games, etc. Red Blacks are supposed to play the Argos tomorrow. As we detailed off the top of the show, we're not sure what's happening quite now, right now, with the Players Association and the league. Last reported by the TSN Football Insiders, Dave Naylor and Farhan Lalji last night, and maybe we'll play Farhan's comments from last night on SportsCenter. Things remain, I think it's fair to say, in flux. There was, as we know, the deal last week that was agreed to, tentative deal was rejected by the players. There was a new offer from the owners as of Monday night, which answered in part some of what the issues were for the players, but does not go the whole way. The whole way on the ratio, essentially. That appears to be what it's come down to, is that they want to go 6 Canadian starters plus the so-called naturalized American, which is a player that's been with a team for 3 years or in the CFL, an American player. It counts as a Canadian after that amount of time. The Canadian players in the league concerned about, this is the start of the slippery slope of the disappearance of Canadian players. That's the reason the last one was voted down. And maybe even just the difference of one player that at this point the Players Association is reluctant to put it to a vote because they don't think it will pass. Here is Farhan Lalji from TSN summing up where we are.
On the surface, this is simply about 9 starting positions league-wide, but really when you dig deeper, this has become much more of a philosophical issue. As far as the league is concerned, we have given a lot. They feel the only things they've received back are the 12 padded practices, along with a 7-year deal. They feel they should get more than that coming back from the players, and as far as the players are concerned, that Canadian ratio is everything. It's what they're all about, at least as far as the Canadians are concerned. They don't want the league to become any less Canadian. Right now, the two sides are digging in heavily.
All right, so there we go. So the nine jobs obviously would reference in one fewer job from among the nine Canadian teams. So that's how you get to nine in total that Farhan refers to.
Yeah, and do the Canadian guys want to bring that back? How is the voting? I'd love to know who the hell's voting, JR, but it's also interesting that from an ownership standpoint, this is not like it's any type of cost savings, right? They're kind of going against their policy of Canadian content and the excitement of that, thinking they can just get a better player in. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic because, like I say, it's not like all of a sudden that American is coming in for a lot less money. It's just allocation, I guess, of money. And, hey, you're dealing with a salary cap, and it's the same for all nine teams. So hopefully they'll find some common ground and get her done.
Keep your eyes and ears here to TSN 1200 and at TSN.ca throughout the day today for the latest on that. Again, the owners have given – What they're calling and referencing is a hard deadline of midnight tonight for this deal to be, I guess, ratified or at least agreed to be able to start the exhibition season tomorrow here in Ottawa. So Red Blacks Argos scheduled for 7:30 tomorrow night at TD Place. One, I'll call it, not ominous is a poor choice of words here. It's probably pretty strong, but one not so positive note on this. Dave Naylor noting that the Argos have canceled their plans to come to Ottawa today. Because of the uncertainty, if things get cinched up, they will come tomorrow, game day. It's an exhibition game, so not the end of the world to make the trip here to Ottawa on a game day, but they are not coming into town as they typically would do today.
Yeah, and I just don't look at that, JR, and think, oh, the players all of a sudden for the veteran guys or guys that have been around an exhibition game, hey, they're giving a little pushback here. And I think at the end of the day, just my guesstimate from the outside, for football players and what we've gone through COVID, they're going to push us as far as they can and just try to get the best deal. Like, I don't think this is a cancel in the season. I don't feel like the league is falling apart, but like let's say for the players or whatever, or like I said, the dynamic within that between the Canadians and the foreign players. Love to know within locker rooms and through the Players Association how the hell that's all kind of playing out.
All right, 8:52. Let's get to some of your comments. We spent a good deal of last hour going through the interview yesterday here on TSN 1200 with Sens GM Pierre Dorion. He touched on a number of topics, but a lot of time spent on the number 7 overall draft pick that Ottawa owns as of right now. And again, Pierre Dorion putting very publicly the for sale sign on that pick for the right. In the right trade, that number 7 pick is definitely in play. He mentioned top 4 defensemen, also mentioned he'd like to add to the team a scoring forward and more scoring depth as well. So the number 7 pick very much in play, which leads to our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question for you today. Based on Dorion's comments, what should the Sens do with the number 7 pick? Should they make the pick, the stick and pick? Should they trade the pick for a top 6 forward? Should they trade the pick for a top 4 defenseman? And again, we're throwing this out there like it can we snap our fingers and it can magically happen. Just because you say you want something to happen doesn't mean that it can happen. Yeah. But those that is what they would like to potentially see on the table if they're going to make that number 7 pick available. So, Simmer, where would you vote on this web poll question? Make the pick at 7? Trade it for a top 6 forward, trade it for a top 4 D.
If I was at the draft in Montreal working for the team, I want my stage time. I've probably gotten a decent suit there, so I'd say keep the pick. Jared, at the end of the day, hey, the season, you know, and kind of forward progress hinges on a top 4 defenseman. So if that right move is there to get that part sealed off, I believe in the duos up front between Norris and Tkachuk. And if you put Bathurst with Stutzla, I think you can mix in some other players. It could be very productive. So I'll go defenseman all day long.
Hammer.
I thought you were sticking and picking.
If he was the scout and had his new suit.
Oh, okay.
I'd even go red suit.
I was thinking, all right, we're not going to agree. But now we're going to agree because if the right blue liner is there, that's going to help you out. I'm all about trading that pick for a nice top 4D.
Oh, man.
So it's not as dramatic.
And I'm being realistic about the number 7 pick. Like, I'm thinking a shortlist guy is not overwhelming, but like a Heskanen, Fox, or Slavin.
Oh, that's all?
Well, you don't need to pick Fox at a Fox type player at number 7. They got him. Yeah. Calgary got him in the 3rd round.
Oh my God! Hey. Well, not to mention, what did the Rangers finally have to give up? A 2nd round pick?
Like nothing.
Like they
nothing.
Knew. It's like, hey, I know he's gonna already sign with me, so let's just pretend that there's no tampering going on.
Let us know what you think of TSN1200.ca. I can tell you.
What are you thinking, Jer?
Same. I hate to be boring and agree with you guys.
No, I
should have gone first because I had the right answer, which is top 4. They got to find a way to fix the defense. They cannot go forward with the team. And I'm the same guy bleeding on that. They got to find somebody to play with Timmy Stützle. Yeah. They need another skilled player. Absolutely. Maybe, as you say, maybe Drake Batherson is that guy, Simmer, or at least they can pencil that in. I am an advocate of that as well. But the top 4 defensemen is every single day the top. They've got to find Forsberg at this point, and maybe Matt Murray if he's able to bounce back health wise. Maybe the goaltending is solidified a little bit, but the defense is very much in question.
Yeah, very much in question still. Would you agree, JR, that between Tkachuk, Norris, Stützle, and Batherson, that not in the distant future they should all be 80-point players? I'm not saying 320 points in 1 year. But would you not forecast them as all?
Yes.
And so I get to, and I'm not going to go Marner and Matthews because that duo. But, hey, I respect Mr. Bunting, and I love his story. But let's not kid ourselves about who he's playing with. And I like Palat, and I like, you know, all those guys that come through. And we see this in Pittsburgh. And I don't want to go Sidney Crosby either. But you should have enough as well as you start to sprinkle in. I'd be curious financially. If you do make your bed with Fiala, now you're carrying 5 guys up front on big tickets, and then the other side on Shabbat. That's just been a major failure from DeMello, who is easy and not sexy, but it was working. How this thing has been forced with Zaitsev, worked with Zub because you want him to start well, you want to make the Olympic team, it worked, but there wasn't enough else around it. It is such a big part of trying to solve. And if you want to go Zub and Shabbat, that's fine, but having a realistic and very good partner for Sanderson. And then one summary, JR, before we finish. The trick in this as well is, okay, maybe not on the forward because Fiala should be better than Connor Brown, but you don't want to arrive where you brought in this player and suddenly JBD and Sanderson link up at training camp. You know, this is going to be really interesting because to me, JBD and Thompson are already ready to pass Hamonic fairly quickly. Well, who the heck is that fella? Like, what's the contract? How does he fit? Where the hell's Mark Mathot when you need him?
Indeed. Yeah. One quick thought, because something else that may, when he put on the table, number 7 pick, any of their, you know, I didn't say any, but prospects and or current players on the roster. Like Pierre Dorion put everything on the table as far as everything is available right now for the right player or players. In terms of, you know, and Ridly Gregg, we've seen a little bit of, and by all accounts, right? I think he referred to him yesterday. In their belief is he was the best player in the Western Hockey League last year. Yeah. Maybe a little bit of bias, but
no. But there's lots to like.
Right?
Yeah.
Shane Pinto, we didn't see any of last year, right? Unfortunately, just a lost year. But lots to like about that player. Hopefully, can return 100% health wise. Are you open to if you're thinking that Gregg can be the guy to trading Shane Pinto, despite the fact you've hardly seen him because he came in with a great deal of positive thought. Yeah. You know, there are a lot of positive from his time in North Dakota that he can absolutely be the number 3 center on this team and maybe better.
Yeah.
And now, you know, hardly starting, you're taking a bit of a gamble that if you were to trade him, that you hope he doesn't maybe turn out to be what you hope he would be if he stayed with you. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, are you open to trading Shane Pinto?
Absolutely, Jerry. Here's a thing, and I understand for everybody. It is fairly simple for me. Outside of the big 4 up front, and I'll say big 3 on the back end because you got to extend Zub, and I do put him in with Shabbat and Sanderson. Outside of those 7 players, you have to be ready to move from anybody. I don't want to trade Formant, and I don't want to trade Pinto, Gregg, anybody else, Lassie, Thompson, Bernard Docker, but you want to get players back. Now, for Pinto, and I would wonder from a value standpoint, I don't think right now, JR, and he's a real good player, I think his value is a little bit ahead of Gregg, and I mean this in a positive way. I both think that, but philosophically, here's the other one. Once you lock yourself up with Stützle and Norris in the middle, you've made your bed with your 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like personally the dynamic of Gregg being a smaller guy in the 3 slot. So that's more philosophical on what I
doesn't
want
play
out of Pinto.
Small, though.
Well, that doesn't. Well, he does though because he's small. It's small. Come playoff time, I know he's a rambunctious guy, But he's not going to make up for Stutzla Norris and suddenly come in and, you know, ground things like a Nick Paul or even the way Kostelec along with Pinto could end up doing. But that's just my thought. But no, God, you got to be open to any of them if that's what you're going to do. That's my core. And what do I need to support and build around it? I don't want to give the trade them, but hey, they've drafted very well. So absolutely, I'd move them.
Okay. Your thoughts on that? Welcome. You can text us at 12-1200. I'm just trying to do the math on the clock here. We're going to take a break. We're not going to do our top of the hour update, no, because we need to save some time. We're going to replay a little bit of Mike Johnson's preview of the Canada-Sweden game from earlier this morning as we get you set for the quarterfinal game at 9:20 this morning. So we're going to come back with that, hopefully squeeze in a couple of your comments on our discussions on Pierre Dorion's comments as well. We'll have those Ottawa Titans seats to give away to the game tomorrow night. So busy last 20 minutes of the show coming up next on TSN 1200. We're back, 9:09 here on this Thursday morning. Crazy day today. Scrambling all over the place. Need the extra 40 minutes, but no, we got a big hockey game coming up in about 10 minutes from now. Face-off from Finland. It's the quarterfinals of the World Hockey Championship as Canada is going to take on William Nylander, Rasmus Dahlin, and Team Sweden. We had TSN's Mike Johnson, our hockey insider, on earlier this morning. Here's a little touch of Mike's preview of the game starting with Team Sweden.
Well, Sweden, not surprisingly, plays a very strong system, defensive game. They don't run and gun. They are built from the defense out with structure and system. Their goaltending solid. I think Ullmark from Boston probably plays. They have Ekman Larson on the back end if he's healthy. They have Adam Larson. They have Rasmus Dahlin. You know, they're going to be stout defensively, very good with their system. What they don't have is a ton of game breakers up front. Will Nylander being the obvious exception, which is why he's maybe the most important in the person in this game for Sweden, because it's going to be low scoring if Sweden is doing what they want. They're going to wait for their opportunity to be very patient and rely on perhaps a moment of brilliance for William Nylander, who always seems to have it in the World Championship. He is one of the all-time highest points per game in the history of this tournament. He's been the MVP of it before. He's won a gold medal, so that will be the guy for Canada to watch. And for Canada, it's been... I think Logan Thompson's supposed to play in net. He's been in, you know, a little bit injured the last couple games, hasn't even dressed. So he's going to be in there. You know, hopefully he's well enough to play well. But again, really, Canada gets himself in trouble with kind of turning pucks over and kind of losing their structure. So that will be Canada's challenge. But Canada has the advantage up front. Canada has more good forwards, more game breakers, more skill up front than Sweden does. And the question is, can that skill control the game so Canada doesn't have to play on their own end so much where they get themselves in trouble?
Nylander knocking off Canada, even Leafs fans can get behind the hatred at that point. and Thompson, the goalie, just explain to people what the tournament's like, because I've been to many, and it is, even for reporters, a bit of a grind. What's the change in the energy like? And interestingly enough, I know the Finns hate the Swedes, but you almost want the Swedes continuing along. What's the energy like setting up, which should be just a hell of a match today, MJ?
Yeah, the energy is great. I got up to Tampere, which is where the semis and the finals will be played as well. Smaller town, maybe like 250,000 people. And it's everywhere you go. Everyone walking around with jerseys, everyone out at the bars and restaurants watching. Is a great vibe to it. And for the players, this is the day that matters, right? And you're right. It's only 2 weeks, but sometimes this tournament feels like it's a bit of a long time. But every player on every team, whether they play in Europe or North America, they play to get to this day. And you can kind of have ebbs and flows in the first seven games in the round robin, but you can't have one today. Because if you lose today, the whole experience feels pretty empty. You go home early. You don't even get to play for a medal. You're like, why did we just take 3 weeks of our summer to do what feels like essentially nothing? So there's a lot of pressure on the result today, and you can feel that in the teams, in the fans, in the energy, and everything else. Today's the day where, like, the real fun hockey part of this tournament begins.
When we last talked to you on Tuesday, that was before Canada's last round robin game against France, you said, well, Canada's game is going in the wrong direction, but Drake Batherson's game is going in the right direction. And man, were you, well, you're on it in terms of Batherson. Canada ended up smoking France in the game, and Batherson ends up with four assists. Again, maybe your thoughts on Batherson and maybe Thomas Chabot as well from a Sens point of view.
Yeah, so Drake, I guess we saw him trending. He's playing on the number one line now. Pierre-Luc Dubois has been Canada's best, most consistent player start to finish. And Dylan Cousins and now Drake Batherson make up the number one line. And it's just a better fit for Drake. The forechecking game, the spacing, it's not kind of the cutesy play on the perimeter game that Matt Barzell does, which I don't know if Drake really found a way to mesh with. I just think it's a really good fit for his style. And when you let him play in a place where he's comfortable and confident, really good things are going to happen. So, yeah, it's going to be on his line to really try to create offense for Canada today. But it looks like they're up to the task. He's been really good on the power play. Not quite as smooth as what we've seen with him in Ottawa when it's going really well. He's playing a lot of time on the strong side here with Canada. He plays primarily on the offside there in Ottawa, and there hasn't been a great fit there. But 5-on-5, he's been really good. And Thomas Chabot, yeah, I don't – maybe we, like, we take for granted, you know, how smooth he is, how many minutes he can play, all the ways he skates pucks out of trouble, all the good passes he makes, because – oftentimes he goes for games, you don't really notice him, and then you look, oh, he played 24 minutes, and he's plus three, and that's, you know, he's just been efficient. He hasn't had any dynamic moments, but today, as the captain against Sweden, he's going to have to play a ton, and he's really going to have to be clean and help his decor be clean, and that's been one of Canada's biggest problems, kind of, you know, the big mistake at the wrong time, so he'll have to do that, but he's been good, not spectacular, but good. But watching him closely, again, you know, he's on the power play here in Canada, too. His threat to score from the blue line, probably not as great as he would like it. You know, he facilitates nicely, but the actual shot is maybe not as great as he'd like it. So that's something to watch out for, you know, almost into next year. Like, you know, does that become an issue? Because it'd be great if he just was a little bit more of a threat. But he's been good.
All right. So there is a nice, tasty little preview of Canada-Sweden from TSN's Mike Johnson, who will be on the call with Gord Miller coming up in 5 minutes from now.